for the beautiful music this morning. So last month, my wife and I went with some friends to a concert by the Go-Go's. Does anyone remember the Go-Go's? Mm-hmm. Go-Go's? Yeah, there's lots of some Go-Go fans out there. So if you don't know the Go-Go's, they were an all-woman rock group that hit it big in the early 1980s, I think 81, 82. It's when I was in high school. Now, I was actually a really big fan at the time, but, you know, they stopped making music together in 1985, and I sort of lost track of them for the last 30 years. And so ahead of this concert, I decided, well, I want to kind of read up on what they've been up to, et cetera. And I actually learned something, and that was back in the early 1980s, the idea of an all-woman rock group being successful, this was really rare. And I didn't understand it at the time because I was in high school and just kind of learning about popular music. I was really kind of tuning in for the first time. And so the Go-Go's hit it big, and I just sort of took it for granted. But that just wasn't the case at all. This was very rare. And I read an interview before the concert with Belinda Carlisle, the lead singer, and she said actually they were really disappointed because they thought that with their success, other groups would come in their wake and be successful as well. And that didn't really happen. And that's not to say that women aren't successful in popular culture, because there is Taylor Swift, and you know, I'm a Taylor Swift fan, and there's others. But this kind of old school, guitar-driven rock band is still the domain of men. And this is actually kind of part of a cultural pattern that we see. In so many fields, despite some real progress towards equality, despite some real progress, there are many fields in which the voices and contributions of women are not valued the same as that of men. The voices and contributions of women are not valued the same as men. And I repeat that because this to me is the understanding of equality. Equality is not about all people being the same. It's about the different voices, the different gifts being given equal value. And the fact is, that is not the case in many places. And I have to wonder why, after all this time, why do we tolerate this? And what's it costing us? Now, I recognize that this is a tricky topic. It's a big topic. It's a complex topic. There's so many nuances. And I also recognize that as a male, I'm not necessarily the best person to address this because I have not been a victim of sexism in any meaningful way. I have not. So I'm not speaking from that position. But I also believe that we are all diminished by sexism, women and men alike. And so it's an important topic for all of us to talk about, whatever our trepidations. And I'd like to start by talking about definitions, because I think it's important to kind of pinpoint how I understand it. And so actually I went to this website that's focused on women who work in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM. And they offer some good definitions. And I'm not saying these are kind of the final definitions, but they're useful. So sexism in general, it includes the attitudes, beliefs, stereotypes, and other types of bias that perpetuate the idea that women are somehow less than men. So that's sort of your basic definition. But there's also different types of sexism, and this is important. First, there is hostile sexism, that is overt discrimination and harassment. I think we all know what that is. And this was actually in the news recently with stories about women firefighters in Fairfax County and the harassment they endure, the serious harassment. It's almost unthinkable that that still goes on, and yet it does. But much more common is benevolent sexism. And this is very different, but it's much more pervasive. So here's the definition. So benevolent sexism is where women are expected to put up with sexual advances and comments about their looks as a compliment, or perhaps as a joke. And also, It's the idea that women are too fragile to undertake certain tasks. And it's called benevolent sexism because it's basically kind of this condescending kind of assumption, this is for your own good. So that's benevolent sexism. And then finally, there's unintentional sexism, and that's basically where people who may profess to support gender equality, and who may, in fact, yet they say things and do things that perpetuate sexist attitudes. And this really was in the news this last month during the Olympics. Did you hear about this coverage? There were so many stories about Olympic commentators making very sexist comments. And I think actually one of the best examples was in a newspaper. So this was, you know, two of the big stories in the Olympics were the swimmers Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky. Yay, Ledecky, she's local. And so they were, you know, the big swimmers, and there was one day in which they both raced, and in the paper the next day, there was a big headline, Phelps ties for silver medal. And then there was a smaller headline that said, Ledecky sets world record to win gold medal. So, I mean, what do you even say about that? Either that's unintentional sexism, or worse, it's intentional. But anyway, we'll call that unintentional sexism. And then I would like to add a fourth category, which I think is sort of implied in these, and that is systemic sexism. And that is sexism that's sort of embedded in our social institutions, such as disparity in pay, such as in laws governing reproductive health, such as in healthcare policies, in criminal justice system, and so on. These definitions are important when it comes to gauging attitudes towards sexism. That's why I mentioned them. You know, if you think, does sexism exist? Well, the answer depends on what you define as sexism. And so actually, the Pew Research Center recently did a survey. They wanted to see kind of what the attitudes were. And the way they put the question was this: do women face significant obstacles in the workplace and beyond? And actually, 56% of men said no, they do not. And 34% of women also said no. But when answering that question, were the people thinking only of hostile sexism? Did they understand the prevalence of and the importance of benevolent and systemic sexism? Because make no mistake about it, sexism still persists. And so for the next couple minutes, I'm going to do something I normally don't do in a sermon, and that is I'm actually going to quote some studies, I'm going to quote some statistics. I generally don't like doing this. This isn't my style, but I think it's very important to do here to really understand what we're talking about. And so the first thing I want to talk about is the Bechdel test. Does anyone know what the Bechdel test is? Okay, so this is a way of looking at movies and sexism in movies. And so there's three criteria that the Bechdel test considers. The first is, does the movie have two women in it? Okay, that's pretty simple. Do they talk to each other instead of just talking to men? And in talking to each other, do they talk about something other than a man? So are there two women in the movies who talk to each other about something other than a man? That's the Bechdel test. There's a group that actually reviewed 1,700 films that were released between 1970 and 2013. And they used the Bechdel test, and they used it in a very minimal way. Their question was, is there one scene, just one scene, that passes the Bechdel test? And in those 1,700 films, only half of them did. Just half of them had at least one scene. But there's more to this, because they also looked at 1,600 films that were released between 1990 and 2013. But instead of just looking at the films themselves, they looked at the budgets. And what they found was, for those movies that passed the Bechdel test, the median budget of those movies was significantly less than the median budget of the full sample. So basically, those movies that gave women a more prominent voice were actually budgeted less from the beginning. Okay. Then let's talk about children's films. Let's talk about Disney. There's actually two researchers who are looking at some of Disney's biggest animated movies. They're looking at the princess movies, as they're called. That was a new term for me. So these are movies in which female characters, and I say characters because they're not all human, but in which female characters have a prominent role. That study is still going on. What they're really looking at is, what is it that these movies convey about gender roles? Because so many children watch these, they want to know, what do they convey about gender roles? What they released so far is actually a study of dialogue. They looked at the dialogue in this film, and they looked at how much dialogue is spoken by female characters versus male characters. And here's what they found, just some examples. Little Mermaid, 68% of the time it is male characters speaking. In Beauty and the Beast, male characters 71% of the time. In Pocahontas, 76% of the time. And so on. This is a fairly simple statistic, and there's a lot more that will be coming from this study. And I'm sure there's many ways to kind of look at the dialogue and how it's divided that way, but there's no avoiding a simple lesson that even in films starring female characters, male characters still have a stronger voice. So in both mainstream movies and children movies, girls and women are often seen but not heard. And this is important. Sexism in popular culture is so incredibly damaging. As the Disney researchers point out, popular culture plays an important role in conveying cultural norms of what is expected of people, of what it's possible for people to do and what not to do. And so that's why when you look at these movies, this is what the children are kind of imbibing. They're imbibing these social expectations. And this is why the Go-Go's were potentially so important. Back in the 1980s, they were basically living proof that women had a place in classic rock and roll. And I will say, although there wasn't the surge of success of women groups after them, there was some cause for hope. And this actually, the concert that we went to, there were three opening acts, and all three were led by women. Two of them were all women rock groups, and one had all women in the lead roles. And so that was very encouraging. But actually, what was more inspiring at this concert is what was going on in the row right in front of us where we were sitting. Right before the concert began, this young girl, I think she's maybe 8 years old, she came in and she was wearing an old faded Go-Go's t-shirt. And she was accompanied by this older woman who I'm guessing was her grandmother. And this was not a woman who was playing the cool grandmother. She was not dressed for a rock and roll concert. She did not appear to know anything about the music. She didn't really appear to enjoy the music. But what she did enjoy was watching the girl dance in her seat. And I sat there as I was watching this. I was wondering, why? How did this come about? Why are they here together? And I like to think that they were there together because the older woman wanted to expose this girl to women who were defying expectations. She wanted to pass on this idea that there are more opportunities there than you might think. And I don't know if that's the case, but I actually hope that that's what happened. And of course, it's just not young girls who are kind of getting these messages, who are understanding these cultural norms. It's also the boys. It's also the boys. I actually came across this heartbreaking article. It was a blog post by this blogger, Jennifer Christensen. And she was writing about commercial advertising on TV, and the way that women are portrayed in commercials. The way they're portrayed as objects, not as people. And she writes, "There is an entire host of moms out here fighting a battle, outnumbered and often dismissed. We would love for our sons to grow into young men who value and enjoy the beauty of a woman while respecting the integrity of her heart and soul. And actually, I want to tell you, I mentioned earlier about the story I came across, this children's story. Let me just tell you what that story was. So it's about Lancelot, you know, from King Arthur, you know, round the, what was it called, the Knights of the Round Table. And basically, Lancelot was forced to marry this witch. And as it turns out, the witch could be beautiful or she could be ugly. But she could be beautiful only half the day and ugly the other half. And she said, Lancelot, it's your choice. Do you want me to be beautiful during the day and ugly when we're alone, or the other way around? And Lancelot thought about it, and he said, well, actually, I give you the choice. And because he was so gracious in giving her a choice, she said, well, I will be beautiful all the time. So that was actually the children's story. And I thought, okay, so basically the message of the story is that it is a man giving a woman a choice about her life, and that the choice is predicated on the idea that the value of this woman is based on her looks, an accident of biology. What's that about? What's that about? That is women as objects all over again. And so I love this idea of respecting the integrity of heart and soul. Because sexism damages our society in so many ways, there's no doubt about that. You know, when we diminish or silence the voice of women, we lose access to their creativity, to wisdom, to experience. And you know, for so much of human history, we have relied on the wisdom of only a fraction of the people. And going forward, we need to hear all voices. We need all wisdom. So that is true, and it's also true in the workforce. There's such stubborn sexism in the workforce, and I just wonder what would happen if the creativity of women was unleashed fully. What could happen? So that is all true. So on a societal level, there's no doubt about the importance of eradicating sexism. But my concern is also with the integrity of our hearts and souls. For too long, we have tolerated sexism in our society. We've tolerated the idea that women can only be understood in relation to men. We've tolerated the idea that women are objects to be owned and desired. And this is so damaging. My concern is that sexism diminishes the potential of individual girls and women to thrive. It diminishes them in the eyes of society, and it diminishes them in their own eyes. And my concern is that sexism hardens the hearts and warps the minds of boys and men. That it makes boys and men less loving. This is my concern, the integrity of our hearts and souls. And like I said at the beginning, this is such a big issue. As a society, we just can't seem to shake this legacy. After so many decades of doing this work, we can't shake it. And thanks to popular culture, we're already passing it on to the next generation. We've got to change this legacy. The problem is, sexism is so widespread, it's hard to know where to begin. And in fact, when I was working on the sermon, I've been wanting to do the sermon for 2 years. No joke. But I haven't done it because I just felt so overwhelmed by the topic. And then I decided in the summer, back in the spring, when we were talking about the fall, it's like, the only way I'm going to do the sermon is if we put it on the calendar, I commit to doing it. And I thought that would kind of force me to do it. And I still found it overwhelming because once I really started focusing on this topic, all these potential things I could talk about kept coming up over and over and over again. It seems like every day I opened the paper or was looking online, there was yet another study or yet another incident. One thing after the other. It is just so overwhelming. And I began to think, you know, how do we turn the corner on this? What am I even supposed to say? What's the good news here? You know, what's the charge I want to give? How do we do this? And then I realized, you know, we do this the same way we always do this stuff. We do this by being the change we want to see in the world. It's such a familiar line, but it's so true. Wherever we might be, at home, at work, in school, we need to create an environment where all voices are honored and all gifts are accepted. It's that simple. It's that simple and yet so daunting. That is the work that we need to do. But this is where faith comes in. Sexism is so entrenched, and the attitudes towards it are still so cavalier that it's difficult to see how we can make a difference. And I have to admit, I tend to be skeptical. It's hard to imagine benevolent, systemic sexism being eradicated in our lifetime. But we need to have faith. We need to believe that the work we can do, the work we do, can make a difference, that it can change hearts and minds, and even change the world. That might not happen in our lifetimes, I get that. But if it's to happen at all, the work must be done now. I'd like to close with another reading from Bell Hooks. Bell Hooks is a prominent feminist author, writes about it extensively and beautifully. She writes, "Visionary feminism is a wise and loving politics, is wise and loving politics. It is rooted in the love of male and female being, refusing to privilege one over the other. The soul of feminist politics is the commitment to ending patriarchal domination of women and men, of girls and boys. Love cannot exist in any relationship that is based on domination and coercion. A genuine feminist politics always brings us from bondage to freedom, from lovelessness to loving. May it be so. Amen."